Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Hello, and welcome back to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. I have another great guest for you, as always, focused on the volunteer state and our nation and world today, with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest, Lori Cordoza Moore. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us on Spotify, iTunes, Rumble, or anywhere you get your podcasts at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. And don't forget to subscribe to the show so you won't miss a single episode. And thank you for listening. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Lori Cordoza Moore. Lori Cordoza Moore is a respected go-to voice on the front lines of battle for the ideological, social, moral, and religious minds of this generation. No pressure. As Special Envoy to the United Nations for Human Rights and Anti-Semitism on behalf of 44 million Christians. A homeschooling mother of five, Lori Cordoza Moore's original wake-up call was discovering anti-Semitic, anti-Christian, and anti-American content in her children's textbooks. The revelation of the early seeds of indoctrination of America's children began her quest to bring awareness and change through every avenue she could reach: legislative, media, advocacy, and ultimately the development of programs and documentaries that are shared and used to educate on a mass level. Her programming is in support of Israel today reaches over 2 billion viewers on a regular basis through a network of close to 24 TV affiliates and satellite broadcasters. Lori has been appointed, awarded, and recognized by her peers for her leadership, including the President's Council on the National Religious Broadcasters, the Top 100 People Positively Impacting Israel, an honorary doctorate degree in theology from the Latin University of Theology, the Friend of Israel Award by the Center for Jewish Awareness, the Goodwill Ambassador to Israel Award given by Israel Consul General of the Israeli Foreign Ministry, and Tennessee Textbook and Instructional Materials Quality Commission. Ah, that is a lot. Hello, Mrs. Cordoza Moore. How are you today?
That was amazing. You got it all in.
Thank you. I've been known not to take a breath.
It's a mouthful. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the program. Welcome to Tennessee. I'm excited to get to do this interview, get to know you, and look at ways that we can help further the cause of justice. That's why we're
absolutely. Yep. You have an impressive resume, and I'm thrilled to have you on the show. Before we get in too much in depth into you, I heard your husband Stan had a very bad accident. How is he doing now?
Thank you for asking. Yes, back in July, he was on his dirt bike and had an accident on the property. And thank God he is alive and well. He still has days where he has to deal with pain, but he's a tough guy. And so, in fact, I found out most recently that he's actually been going to the racetrack with his dirt bike again. So that tells you something. Pain or no pain,
he can't keep a good man down, I guess they say. No, all right. So just by way of introduction, because you are a hometown girl here in Franklin, Tennessee. Franklin, right?
That's right.
Yep. Okay. So you ran in the Republican primary this year for House of Representatives District 63, and you only came within 180 votes of beating Jack McCallman, I think his name was. I wasn't here yet, so I don't have names correctly pronounced. But he went on to beat the Democrat 70-30, so that's good. Will Jack do a good job?
Jake McCallman. And, that's anybody's guess, because we didn't know any. So it was really a surprise to many Republicans in Williamson County, especially in that district, because we've been there for 33 years. I've been involved with the Republican Party for as many. And so when he decided to, you know, move in, I think he's only been here a few years, but somehow we also had a third player in the mix that took votes that would have gone to me, but that's okay. I know my name has the name recognition. We should have won. Unfortunately, we didn't, but that's not going to stop the work that we're doing in Tennessee. So I'm not going anywhere. So whether you're in Williamson County or you're at the state capitol, and I'm wearing you out because of what's happening in our schools, I'm going to be here for a while.
So. Yeah, and doing research on you is difficult because you have two hats, really. I mean, you're saving the Williamson County schools and you're saving the world from the curse of anti-Semitism. So I didn't really know where to begin, but I thought maybe we could just be as broad as possible because you can speak so eloquently on so many issues. And, you know, there's a stereotype held over from the 50s and 60s that the South is racist or Confederate or whatever you want to say. Do you find that still to be the case? Do you have any comments on that to sort of put that to bed?
I do. And you know who the racist people in the South are and have always been?
The Dixiecrats?
Yes, absolutely. Remember, we have the KKK was founded here in Tennessee. So, and they were Democrats. They weren't Republicans. And so we tend to forget that, and the media, the mainstream media, doesn't remind us of that history. So we have to continually remind.
Yeah, and it doesn't help, you know, that we had Andrew Jackson and the Trail of Tears, although he did amazing things besides that. And we had Polk, who I don't really know too much about other than he was. Oh, sorry, your Zoom clicked out there. What did you say?
No, I didn't. I only made the comment that, you know, it is the KKK that came from here. The Democrats were the racists. They were the slave owners. They were pushing slavery. And we forget that. And the mainstream media does not share that information. That's why we exist. And of course, I have a media background, as I'm sure you know. I'm a media veteran. But I wear, as you said, multiple hats. I serve as a special envoy at the United Nations for the World Council of Independent Christian Churches. That's a great honor to be able to speak out against anti-Semitism and all forms of hate, really, at the UN. But I started the organization Proclaiming Justice to the Nations back actually 20 years ago. In 2002, we introduced a resolution in the state of Tennessee 6 months after 9/11 that stood with Israel. We were making a declaration as a state, as a state government, as the citizens of the state, that we understood what terrorism was, and we were now all Israelis. And so we wanted to send the message to Israel and to our Jewish brethren in the land that we are standing with you. We know what you're going through. We've experienced it. And, you know, we have to continue to educate future generations, not just here in the United States, but in Israel as well, to remember there's a unique relationship that America and Israel share, and it's because of our shared values. It's because our values are founded on the Bible. And so those concepts, the Ten Commandments, you know, to, you know, love your neighbor, all of those principles are founded in the Torah, in the Bible. And so that's what makes our relationship unique. And I was speaking with the Consul General to Houston before he left and went back to Israel, sharing with him what we were doing with education. And he said, you have to come to Israel and you need to teach the kids in Israel, Israeli schools, about why the relationship between America and Israel is so unique and it's worth protecting and defending. So it's a great honor to do that.
Absolutely. And so people who don't know, the other hat you wear is the Tennessee Textbook Commission. And so what I find so fascinating about this is that, you know, by being involved in news and world events as long as I have, you know, the Saudi Arabians and the Palestinian Authority, their textbooks are it's woven in there to be anti-Semitic, to be hateful, and basically to indoctrinate future terrorists, let's face it.
Right.
And somebody's paying for those books, somebody's publishing those books. And now we have you, who has been a stalwart against this for so long, having to deal with something similar right here in our county in the textbooks and the libraries. So can you update us what's going on with the Tennessee Textbook Commission?
Yeah, that's, so let's go back. Let's give a little history and context to what I'm going to be sharing. This issue with the textbooks happened a decade ago, and it happened as a result of a parent who is one of our members of our organization. We call them watchmen. And her son came home from school one day questioning his faith. He asked his mom, who has legitimate rights to the land of Israel? And this is in a Williamson County belt buckle of the Bible Belt state. And, you know, there's a church on every corner. And the mother said to her son, who was in high school, it was his first year. This is a homeschool kid. So he was well-grounded in history. And she said, what does the Bible say? And he said, I know, Mom, what the Bible says. He said, but tell me the truth. Who has legitimate rights to the land of Israel? Well, that fired up my friend. She called me and she said, you will never believe what we're teaching our kids in Williamson County. So she brought me the book. It was a Pearson published textbook. She brought the book. Pearson is, for those of you who are listening, Pearson is a global textbook publisher. 60% of their sales come out of the United States of America. 80% of their textbooks are used in the United States in U.S. schools. They are a British-based textbook publishing company. They are not U.S.-based. Their shareholders, the largest four, include the Islamist governments of Qatar, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Libya. So you think those guys are getting a good return on their investment?
So I was right. My sniff test was right. They are in the same scholarly vein as the Palestinian authoritarian children and terrorists. Yeah.
Little area, you'll see similar vent in what we're teaching to our children. So what happened was the quote in the textbook basically legitimized Palestinians blowing themselves up in a Jerusalem restaurant because they were waging a war against Israeli government policies and army actions. So we went through the process. There was a protocol to try to remove the book because it was unacceptable. It was inaccurate. It was biased. It didn't reflect the values of the community. And lo and behold, we went through the process. The board was going to vote one night at a school board meeting whether to keep it or get rid of it. And so we had to go to work. So we launched a massive media campaign. We ran commercials for 2 weeks on local conservative talkers because we knew that's where the low-hanging fruit was. And once those parents found out what was going on in their Williamson County schools, whether their kids were in it or whether they're paying the taxes to keep those schools going, keep them open, we knew that if these parents found out about the stuff, so we ran the spots. Sure enough, the night of the school board meeting, standing room only, parents lined up, told them, get rid of the textbook. I got up and I boldly said that if you don't get rid of these textbooks, we're going to get rid of you. This is an election year. And guess what? They voted that night, slap in the face to the parents to keep that book. So we left the school board meeting that night. The next day, we mobilized the community. We looked for people to run for school board. We got volunteers to help them. And lo and behold, we only had four months later, come election day in August, six of those school board members that were up for re-election, we brought them all down in one election cycle. Wow. And they, you know, when I boldly said, we're going to remove you from office, I think it was a prophetic word. I was speaking to them. I'm not a prophet, but we were able to remove them. And that model has been the model now that we've been using for the last decade all over the country. We travel to, in fact, Florida. You can see the evidence of the work that we've been doing in Florida for the last decade. This has been going on for a long time because once we exposed what was happening in Williamson County, Fox News picked up the story. They ran with it for 2 weeks. And we started getting phone calls from parents and citizens all over the country saying, hey, I'm finding similar content in my kids' textbook. Right. So we traveled all over the country. We have a summit that's coming up January 29th, 2023 in Franklin. It's called Taking Back America's Children. And we are going to, again, train, equip parents, educate them, motivate them, activate them to take action to flip their school boards. We can do it. And we saw the evidence of it in this last election cycle. Yeah. We kept hearing.
And even before that, we saw it in Virginia, where Governor Youngkin was able to ride all the way to the governorship with the same thing, the school boards. And then in Florida, last week, I guess it was, the school boards that were backed, the school board candidates that were backed by DeSantis, I think they won 6 out of 7. So absolutely, this is the biggest thing for 2023 in an off election year. But what I've learned actually from my research, Lori, is that the boards have pretty much abdicated to the bureaucracy that is bigger than them, which is how a Witten Wisdom or a Harpeth Hall all girls private school will open enrollment to biological males after 150 years against parents and donors' wishes. Mm-hmm. This is federal funds and the strings attached to it, isn't it? And sadly, it's a small percentage of dollars. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're willing to throw our kids over for a small amount of money.
Yeah, and that's why one of the big issues that we're pushing in Florida and in Tennessee this year, and God willing, Ohio will be right behind us, is that we have to remove the federal government from our schools on the local level. We didn't, in the United States of America, before Jimmy Carter, we educated our children in our states, and we had higher standards than the standards we have for education now, because now we keep implementing these programs that have never been tried, who are utter failures. We've always used a classical, traditional approach to educating our children in America until Jimmy Carter. And once Jimmy Carter came along with his newfangled ideas, constitutionally, the federal government is not supposed to be involved in state government education. We're supposed to educate our own children. But what they do, they come up with these grandiose programs that have never been tested. And then they put these, they attach these huge checks to them. And what governor is going to say no? Well, the governors have gotten used to that money coming in. And it's time for us to tell the federal Department of Education, we want out. We don't want your money. We don't want your programs. We're going to use Tennessee dollars for our Tennessee kids. And so governor,
you agree then with Betsy DeVos, who was the former Secretary of Education, who literally said in her book, shut it down, close it.
Yeah.
It doesn't do any good.
Yeah. Well,
have you ever had any run-ins with the Randy Weingarten at the American Federation of Teachers?
No, I've put out statements against her. I mean, this is the woman who supports parents and citizens as being designated domestic terrorists because we would dare show up at a school board meeting and challenge the status quo. Well, Randy Weingarten and all the other lefties, the school board association, you know, even the attorney general, Merrick Garland, this is what we are up against. And it's time for us as parents and citizens of a republic to tell these leaders, no, not on my watch. You're not going to have my children. And until we're willing, I mean, we woke up, we came to the party late. We've known our organization as an organization, we've known for a decade what's been going on. But this was going on even further before 2012 when this textbook was brought to my attention. In fact, the history behind Common Core was Bill Gates. Bill Gates and Melinda Gates went to the United Nations G8 summit in Moscow back in 2006. They presented the concept of Common Core. Well, by 2000, that was 2006. By 2012, just 6 years, probably less than 6 years, they were able to get that Common Core into the state legislatures, into the departments of education, 6 years. It didn't take long. It's funny how these programs that they implement, it doesn't take long to get them in and adopted, but to try to get rid of them,
yeah,
it's a nightmare.
The speed of cashing a check, basically.
Yeah, and that's why it's important that the parents on the local level, and that's what our summit is all about, Taking Back America's Children. We will equip you to activate your community to take back local control. It has to start, though, with the school board. And like we just discussed, we saw the evidence of the strategy. It works. It worked in November 8th. We kept hearing from the media pundits, oh, where was the red wave? Well, they didn't look far enough or deep enough because the red wave was happening in the school boards across the country. But I find it interesting that none of the mainstream media is promoting that or talking about that. They're not exposing that. So people don't know about this. So our job is to try to get the word out so people will understand that what happened was a tsunami on the local level, which we have been saying. It's all about local politics. And the way to save the future of our republic and our children is through the local school board.
And the superintendents, which for those who don't know, you got into a pretty public spat with former Williamson County School Superintendent Mike Looney. You got him to step down over assault charges, criminal charges. So, you know, sometimes we want to purify these schools, the textbooks, the libraries for our innocent children, but the people at the top are not exactly the purest of public servants, let's just call them. So, how did all that with the ethical issue of the board's conflict with Looney's conflict work out?
Well, eventually the pressure came to bear on him. And we never gave up. We kept pushing and pushing and pushing. Back when we were able to throw those six school board members out back in 2014, one of the things that we focused on in telling people and also telling the candidates that won, when you win, the key thing is you have to, first and foremost, you have to cut off the head of the snake. The head of the snake is the superintendent of schools. And you have to tell the superintendent of schools, guess what? It's time for you to go bye-bye because your policies are destroying our children. And we're going to find people who represent the values we have to be a superintendent over our children's schools. And let me tell you another little interesting story about Mike Looney. When all of this was going on about the textbook, because I have a global audience and a global list of supporters, when I put out a press release or a statement about something, it goes global. It doesn't just stay in the United States or in Tennessee for that matter. Mike Looney at the hearing complained that he was getting emails from people in other countries. And I just smiled like a Cheshire cat. Yes, you did. Because we told everybody about what you were doing.
Yeah, so, hey, no, I want to read this from the newspaper real quick and then we'll move on. But yesterday, as in February 2018, Franklin police officers and paramedics were dispatched to Franklin High School for a reported psychological emergency. While working with the student's mother and school staff to transport the student to the hospital, Dr. Mike Looney, Williamson County School Superintendent, abruptly entered the conference room, grabbed the student by her arm, and forced her out of the school and to his vehicle. FPD said in a statement, officers intervened and had on-scene paramedics transport the student to the emergency room for evaluation. So that's a little different than saying, hey, you are a superintendent overseeing a school that's allowing a curriculum we don't like. That's a felony. That's a crime. That's somebody who's going to jail. Just recently, I learned that Battleground Academy, which is the big school here where a lot of the famous celebrities have their kids. You're shaking your head because you know what I'm going to say. They are teaching CRT. Mm-hmm. Even after all that you've been able to accomplish, what's going on with that?
Still going on. CRT, Common Core, it's still in the school system. And until parents become educated and informed about what CRT is, what Common Core is, what to look for, how to combat it, until we can get them to do that, this is going to continue to be an issue. That's why I said it's easy to get these programs implemented. It takes a long time to try to get them out, but they can be removed. We did it with that textbook. Mike Looney overplayed his hand. In his arrogance that he was the
king. Oh, we got a little Zoom pause there.
King in Williamson County. I must be saying something right.
Yep. Say it again, though, because your Zoom paused. Yeah.
Okay. What I was going to say was Mike Looney overplayed his hand. He thought he was the king of Williamson County. He had the blessing and the support of the mayor, the county and the city mayor. They all loved him. But when he acted that way, he went overboard. And that was the demise. And now I do believe if he's still there, he is in Georgia. And I think he is in one of the counties right around Atlanta, the vicinity. But he's, you know, I don't know who would have picked him up with that kind of record, you know, with that incident that had occurred. I find it interesting.
Washington State or California, probably. You know, I was meeting with Jack Johnson yesterday and he was telling a public forum, wasn't just him and I, but he was saying that one of his ideas was because he's hearing a lot of pushback from the schools saying, well, we've already paid for this curriculum. We're out of pocket this money. So we really just want to teach it. We're taking out the bad stuff. We're keeping the good stuff. And his idea was, why don't we write you a check for what you paid, make you whole again, and just stop teaching it? Well, yeah. He must not be aware that Wit and Wisdom is really just CRT, which is really just something from 1968, which is really just Howard Zinn, which is really just, you know, Marx. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's like whack-a-mole a little bit. So Jack's probably not onto the right track there, thinking that that's the way to do it. Any comments on Title IX and the girls and biological boys in sports in the schools? I know it's not textbook related, but any comments on that?
I will only just say, referencing back to Jack Johnson, we don't need to write them back a check. We need to send the books back because they are defective merchandise. And we need to tell them we want our money back. Either you clean up these books or give us back our money. Because that was my investment, my tax dollars, along with everybody else in my community. We paid for that garbage. So I don't want to hear, oh, we'll write you a check. No, Jack Johnson, they need to write us back a check. They need to take those books and fix them, put accurate information in them, or we want our money back for the defense.
I had a feeling that you were going to say something like that. Okay, so amongst the backdrop of issues like kids in schools and what they're learning.
Sorry.
We got a little bit of a Zoom issue today. That's okay. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yeah. Good point about Jack. Okay, so amongst that backdrop of issues like kids in schools and what they're learning, sort of a 1916 versus a 1776 curriculum fight and the culture war where we now have Kanye West, huge star, comes out with anti-Semitic statements. At the same time, violence against Jewish cemeteries, Jewish store owners, and Jews walking down the streets of Brooklyn are on the rise. Tell us about ProclaimingJusticeToTheNations.org.
Well, we have been educating Christians about their biblical responsibility to stand with Israel and the Jewish people against the rise of global anti-Semitism. Of course, as I mentioned, I am a media veteran. We produce award-winning documentary films and television programs in order to do that and distribute them globally. The issue of the rise of anti-Semitism, I never thought I would see in my day, especially when I started the mission. I knew that the reason why I was starting the organization was to prepare so that when another Nazi arose, that the church would not respond the way they responded in Germany. Germany at the time was a Judeo-Christian nation. There were Jews and Christians who lived in Germany. And this is the nation for Christianity that gave us the Reformation movement. So and it's an educated nation. I mean, people from Europe would send their kids to the universities in Germany to educate them. So how in the world can an educated nation that is wealthy or was wealthy? And had the stuff to happen, the medical treatments that they were executing, the drugs that they were injecting into people. How could people stand by? This was my question, Steve. And it disturbed me that humanity would be silent. Well, look at what is happening today. And I asked the question back then when we produced our documentary, The Forgotten People, Christianity and the Holocaust, which you can find on the website on the store page. Watch the film because to look at what we published or produced back in 2013 to what is happening in 2022 today. It's frightening to see. How could humans stand by and allow what is going on in our country and in our world today happen? Well, let's just look back to Germany. Yeah. We did it back then. And that's why we are focused on people of faith, because people of faith will respond. And there were people of faith in Germany who did respond. We know about Marler. We know about Dietrich Bonhoeffer. We know about Corrie ten Boom. They were people who believed the Bible. And they also believed that God had a special plan and place for Israel and the Jewish people. But unfortunately, most of the Christians were anti-Semites.
Yeah.
This is Europe, after all. We got the pogroms. We got history. We know what Christians have done to the Jews throughout the centuries. And we had to change that. And the only way you're going to change that is if you educate Christians from a biblical perspective using the tools and technology that we have today, which is media. That's how you get them. And so, you know, unfortunately, we're seeing it happen again. But I'm telling you, people, Steve, all over the world are rising up. We started a chapter in South Africa. We started a chapter in Australia. We've got four African countries with pastors who have chapters, who are engaged in fighting this battle. We do Bible studies every week always talking about Israel, always talking about our Jewish brethren. What is our duty? What is our responsibility? What is our responsibility to humanity?
Yeah.
So, no, it's critically important.
If and they would just teach Europe, Isaiah in the Sunday schools, we would all realize that there was one King of the Jews. Okay, so yeah. We hear a lot, especially in an election year, about hate speech and attacks on free speech on campuses. How do we stop anti-Jewish hate speech at the same time promote speech like the Matt Walsh Stop Mutilations of Minors rally that the left tries to shut down? I know it sounds unrelated, but like what when the ACLU defended Nazis for their First Amendment right to say stupid stuff, how do we walk the line between free and limited speech?
There's only one truth state around the world. You have the people who agree with you, who make up a percentage to the right. Then you have people who are adamantly opposed to you and disagree with everything that you say to the left. And then you have the vast gulf of people in between. And those people really don't know what to think because they've been educated now with propaganda. And they've been convinced that the protocols of the learned elders of Zion is actually authentic documentation of the Jews when it has been deemed as a fraud throughout the centuries. The only way we are going to combat anti-Semitism once and for all is to use the foundation of truth, which comes from the Bible, because remember, the majority of people that we're talking to, I don't care where we are on the planet, are Christians. They're the largest number of people. So our messaging is always to that audience because we never know when that message is going to fall on that audience or someone in that audience. The other key is we have to be proactive, knowing that this is an age-old hatred that never goes away, that it always rears its ugly head. I mean, let's go back to Persia with Haman. We can go back even further to Pharaoh in Egypt. So we see that there's a history of it, but every generation we should be teaching our children. And in Florida, for example, Governor Ron DeSantis I went to D.C. years ago when he was still congressman. He was running for governor. And this was after the whole textbook battle. It was front page news. The media was on this. So he was well aware of what was going on. I scheduled a meeting. One of my major donors set that up. I went to see him. I brought three books and I showed him the content in the textbooks. And I said, look at these textbooks. They're all Common Core compliant. These textbooks are publishing. Pearson Publishers is pushing this propaganda. We need to get rid of it. He said to me then, he said, I'm running for governor. If I get elected, we're getting rid of these textbooks and we're getting rid of Common Core. Well, you know what? History shows us he did it.
Kept his promise, yeah. Hopefully you can hear
exactly
me.
Exactly what he said. He was going to do nobody else.
That's right.
Yeah.
So Harvard and Yale, huge university system in America, obviously, and they're about to lose their discrimination lawsuit against Asians and admissions.
Yeah.
That lawsuit happened many years ago already against Jews, like many, many, many years ago, not being allowed admission in the 1920s. Why did they enjoy so many years of the same issue before being overruled again? And I think as of 2020, the world's Jewish population was estimated at 14.8 million, 0.2% of the 8 billion worldwide population. Why so much fuss?
Because everybody, not everybody, there are elite group of people in the media who hate God. Let's just call it what it is. That's why anti-Semitism takes place. They hate God. They hate God because he chose a specific people group. And they don't like that choice. And you know what? It's not their place to decide. It was God's decision. He created the universe. He decided to have a relationship with a specific people to worship their God the way they want to. Not very popular. So
no,
yeah,
that's a great point.
The Asians and the Jews are both, and even now, white men. Let's group everybody together. If you're a man and you're white, you're the problem. If you're an Asian, you're too smart. You're the problem. If you're a Jew, you have too much control over the media or Hollywood or the banks, just like Ilhan Omar said.
Yeah.
It is racism. It is Jew hatred. Let's call it what it is. And anybody who gets in the way is part of the problem. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there's a scripture in the Bible, and you can believe the Bible or you don't have to believe the Bible. But you know what? I find it amazing that these things always come true. When God told Abram, I will be your God to you and your descendants forever. And he said, I'm going to make you like the stars of the heavens and the sands on the seashore. And all the land you see, Abraham, I'm giving it to you and your descendants forever. Well, God chose that land. Who are the Palestinians? Who is even Europe, Great Britain, to determine what the borders and the boundaries of Israel are? That land was given to a specific people, and these people resent it. And so if we don't educate people, again, the majority of people, I'm not worried about the atheists, because you know what? You might be able to get them. You might be able to reason with them. I'm focused on the largest number of people on the planet. And if we can get to the children in our schools, which we did in Governor DeSantis in the state of Florida, we were invited because we have earned a reputation of being the watchman when it comes to textbooks and instructional materials. And Governor DeSantis, his Department of Education invited us to participate. He called for an emergency review of civics, which I think should be done in every state across this country, given what's happening with our youth today and this 1619 garbage. But anyway, all that to say is, we were reviewing the civic standards. We made recommendations for changes, and there were certain specific changes that we requested that no one else did. And that was to teach the role that the Hebrew Bible played in the founding of our government, in the drafting of our founding documents, in the structure of our form of government, even a republic. The concept of a republic comes out of the Torah. It comes out of the Hebrew scriptures. But if you're reading the foreword, they think they were outraged that I was dare to say such a thing, that our country was founded on the Torah. Well, yes, of course it was. Look at our government. I mean, look at the halls of government. You can go into the Supreme Court building and you can see a picture of Moses, his statue on the wall. You can go into the House of Representatives. There he is again. How does he get on these walls? Why Moses? Because he gave the law, the Ten Commandments. And by golly, that used to be our foundation. But DeSantis had the courage to adopt that. There were people on his team, because I heard from my insider, my whistleblower, that they removed those concepts of the Hebrew Bible. That's part of our history. And somebody,
they did take the Ten Commandments out of most of the courts. So they're trying to expunge it, just like taking down Jefferson Davis and some places Lincoln.
That's right.
I find it very ironic, actually. I'm going to go off my notes here. Governor Lee chose you to help with the textbooks, right?
Actually, he didn't choose me.
Oh, sorry.
Speaker of the House, I would have been the last choice for governor.
Oh, Lee. Sexton did? Sexton chose you? Okay. I was going to say, because now that's clarifying. Now I understand, because he chose Penny Schwinn out of California to be the head of schools and didn't choose you, but someone else did. And you're totally a counterbalance. I mean, if the roles were reversed, this wouldn't even be a problem. You would have already gotten rid of this a long time ago. So, you know, I tried to find numbers on Jews in Asia and Indonesia, and I couldn't. Because I don't think there are any there. You mentioned Asian with the Harvard and the Yale.
There actually are Jews in Japan.
But very small. Yeah.
Very small.
Yeah.
But they're there. And also in China, there's a tribe that's been there from ancient times.
Right. So, but it would not even rank on us. You couldn't do it. You'd need a scientific calculator to even mention the percentages. But the point is that they're also the least anti-Semitic countries in the world, of course, you know, Gaza being the most anti-Semitic, so on a spectrum there, but closest to Israel. What is the state of the Arab world after the Abraham Accords in anti-Semitism? We got about 5 minutes left.
With regards to Abraham Accords, the state of the Arab world is that the Arab countries that are smart, the Arab leaders who are smart, are building those relationships, despite the fact that President Trump is no longer in the White House, despite the fact that Joe Biden is pushing his agenda and pushing for this two-state solution. The smart Arab leaders know that a relationship with the state of Israel is to their benefit. they will join forces to protect one another. But I'm telling you, what Biden is trying to unravel and undo is not going to be done, because these Arab leaders, they don't respect him.
That's good.
They respect strength. And, you know, with Bibi, with the Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu coming back in to lead the nation of Israel, 70% vote approval. It is amazing to see how he has been able to galvanize the country once again and unite the country. 70% is unheard of. Thank God they didn't have the machines that we were using. So we know that it was a free and fair election.
The UN is never on Israel's side, that I can tell. Its leadership is made up of the worst regimes on earth and never call out their own friends' atrocities, but regularly insult Israel. Even the current UN ambassador for Biden is anti-Israel. The U.S. spends billions on the UN and the peacekeepers commit crimes all over with impunity. Would you be in favor of kicking the UN out of New York's Turtle Island for their headquarters and cutting their funding?
I don't even know how in the world they got here in the first place. They should be over there next to the International Court in The Hague, but they don't belong in America. But the only reason, this is what's interesting, the only reason why they built that building and why it sits there in America, because that's the only safe place, that they don't worry about getting bombed. Because they're on American soil, because we have a justice system, or we used to, that would protect all people's rights. So you can't guarantee that in some of the other countries. So no, it's to go to the UN, I have to tell you honestly, as someone who, you know, lives most of the time in our states and the local level fighting these battles, to be at the United Nations, it is the most uncomfortable place. The environment is just, it's so, I can't describe, but I'm telling you, it's not normal. And then you got now people, Klaus Schwab, who is a German again, and he and Bill Gates want to control world population. Oh, let's use that vaccine. But now you have a globalist, another German, who has risen to power, and all of these leaders welcome him in, give him a seat at the table at the dais. They're all their big events. And it's frightening to see, but no.
Not much good comes out of Germany, unfortunately. Well, Lori, thank you so much for your time. I could go on with you for hours. I hope to have you back, actually, because you're always there breaking news and doing very important stuff. But I really appreciate you taking the time to come on with me. And we are at the end here. So please tell our listeners where they can find out more about you and Proclaiming Justice to the Nations or anything else you're into.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Steve, thank you for having me for this first introduction. We look forward to working with you and helping to get the message out. We got a lot of work to do, and everybody has skin in the game. And so what you do, I can't do. And what I'm doing, you can't do. But we both do our part, and that's so important. So I want to tell your listening audience, you've heard about some of the great successes. You can learn more about what we've done and our strategies at pjtn.org. Just remember pajamas, pjtntennessee.org, and visit our website, sign up to get on the mailing list, follow us on all our social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we're all there, and stay informed and engaged. And we've got that event coming up, Taking Back America's Children Summit, in Franklin, Tennessee, January 29th, 2023. It's going to be an all-day, one-day event, but we're going to help equip you. People are coming from across the country, and we're going to equip you, train you, so that you can run for school board, or you can help to flip the school board in your school district. The way we win, ladies and gentlemen, is county by county, state by state. We have to take back local government, take back control of local government, so that we can shore up our state legislatures so they will uphold our constitutional rights, both our state constitution as well as our U.S. Constitution. That's how we win and we take back. And that's really what the framers of the Constitution envisioned for us. And it's time for us to get off of our tuchus, get to work, because we got a nation to save.
That's very
and
well
even
said.
The world.
PJTN.org. That's very well said. All politics is local, and this proves it time and again. School boards, superintendents, local politics will be the savior of this country. So thank you for being a leader in that, a warrior for that. And thanks for coming on again. Talk to you. Happy
God
holidays.
Bless you. Keep up the great work. You too.
Thank you.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. I don't understand how you ever did without me. I don't understand how I bring you down to your knees. Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard and anything else on our minds. Steve, Lori Cardoza Moore, what'd you think of that?
Well, I really, that was a very, very interesting interview, and she has her hands in a lot of different things, trying to make a point of seeing that they're godless people. I call them darklings in my book, who really hate God and hate human beings. And I want to read a little scripture here. It says in Psalms 2, "Why do the nations rage and the peoples plan in vain? The kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers gather together against the Lord and against the Anointed One. Let us break their chains, they say, and throw off their fetters. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. And then he rebukes them in his anger, and he terrifies them in his wrath, saying, I have installed my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will proclaim the decree of the Lord. And he said to me, you are my son. Today I have become your father. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your inheritance, and the ends of the earth your possession. You will rule over them as an iron sepulcher, and dash them to pieces like pottery. Therefore, you kings, be wise, be warned, you rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord you with fear, and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry, and you will be destroyed in your way. For the wrath can flare up in a moment. Blessed are all those who take refuge in him." And that's a prophecy about King Jesus. And whether you're a Jew or a Gentile, whether you're a Palestinian or an Israeli, you're lost without Jesus. And we know that Bill Gates is as lost can be, and that's why he does what he does.
Amen. Okay. Well, moving on, I suppose. It's hard to beat that, but let's go to the next segment here. We got a couple clips. Don't worry, these are short, but really important and a point to be made. Let's play clip one. I'll give you a little commentary. We'll move on to clip two.
Personally, the response to this policy is troubling because I rely on the ACLU. I rely on the Lawyers Committee. I rely on our public defender to honestly engage with the policy questions in front of us and give us good advice. I opposed Proposition H in 2018 because I thought it was overreach by the POA. I thought they were going too far. But some of the rhetoric that has been used about this policy and that has generated this debate here leads me to feel like I'm not sure these organizations are trustworthy folks for me to rely on as I think about criminal justice policy and the path that San Francisco should be taking. It starts feeling like they're just anti-police. And that's not where I am. It's not where we're talking about.
Okay, there we go.
So what he just said, for those who don't understand political San Francisco talk, please stop it. If you have concerns about giving police authority to use lethally armed robots, you must just be a cop hater. So what this is we're going to go through a couple of these, is the San Francisco Board of Supervisors hearing on the SFPD's request for authority to arm robots, and it's totally unhinged. Let's play the second one.
To do that, and the scenario I didn't bring up, the SWAT team talks about often, is the suicide bomber. Like, we don't want, they have a suicide vest. We don't want to get close to that person. We'd rather send a robot in closer to that person so we don't get detonated when they pull the string.
Right.
That's so what he said was, look, I'm a reasonable guy, but if you don't use lethal robots, our city will become a soft target. Okay, let's play the third one with the gal with the short hair.
Okay, the gal with the short hair. Here we go.
We are in a place where people are looking at us, wanting to harm us. We had, people, armed people, stage a coup or attempt a coup in our nation's capital, and all kinds of hate thrown our way and to our elected officials from people all over the country because of who we are. So, you know, I am under no illusion that we will never, you know, be able to use this. I know for a fact that I do think
here in San Francisco, we're in a place where people want to harm us. The stone cold reality is that we need explosive robots to stop coups and hate crimes. That's what she said. Now let's hear the long haired gal. This one's funny.
Okay, hold on here. Sorry. Here we go.
God forbid we ever get there. And thank you for, in the last 11 years, having restraint. And thank God we've never had to use this type of weaponry. But you know what? As Supervisor Dorsey said, I'm really glad we have it. Thank you.
I hope we continue not to need it, but thank God we have this weaponry. All right. So let's listen to the voice of reason now.
Now, which one is this one, Steve? I'm
This is the guy with glasses on and the gray blazer.
Thank you, President Walton. I honestly can't believe what I'm hearing in these chambers and what's in this proposal. I will associate myself with a lot of Supervisor Ronan's comments. And in some ways, you know, I had concerns when I saw this in the first place. They've only been increased by the dialogue that we've heard here so far. I mean, it is a strange enough way to make policy to try to find one thing that might one day happen and then arm us to assuming there's no other way to deal with it other than killer robot. But what I'm hearing here, I mean, just what's being invoked is really, I want to talk about this. I mean, I was very surprised to hear the assistant chief invoking Mandalay Bay. I mean, we're talking about a sniper in a fully occupied hotel. And the proposal is that the discretion granted here, even with sign off by the assistant chief, would be to put a bomb bearing robot to blow up that hotel. I mean, I just cannot believe that is seriously being suggested as an example, or a sniper on an apartment building. We're going to blow up the apartment building with a robot. Or the last one, a suicide bomber. We're going to use a robot with a bomb to subdue a suicide bomber. Like, that's what was just said, in all seriousness. A robot with a bomb to subdue a suicide bomber. What's the threat that the suicide bomber poses? That they might detonate their bomb. So we're going to send a robot with a bomb to detonate a bomb.
Oh, gosh. Steve, this is insanity.
Yeah, crazy pills, right? And that's the voice of reason. Now, just to show that I'm not completely against boards of supervisors in San Francisco, at least, go up to the top and play the distinguished assistant chief of police.
This is the one, I think.
To do that, and the scenario I didn't bring up, the SWAT team talks about often, is the suicide bomber. Like, we don't want, they have a suicide vest. We don't want to get close to that person. We'd rather send a robot in closer to that person so we don't get detonated when they pull the string.
That
right,
one.
That's what he was talking about. So let's just put a copper on this. Go to the bottom and play the young gentleman with the purple striped tie.
Okay. Let's see if I can't get this thing now. It's
yeah, this is the longest recap of all time.
you know, and I know most of this will probably fall on deaf ears because for some reason we forgot what happened in 2020, and we think that giving police officers more tools and more weapons is going to make people more safe. And I haven't seen any evidence of that, but I'll say it anyway. And it seems like every week we're being asked to either violate more civil liberties of folks here in this city on behalf of the police department, or pass policies that increase opportunities for negative interaction with people of color in the police department, when we were told by the Department of Justice, when we were not recommended but actually mandated as a city to make certain changes towards reform. And this may seem minuscule.
Wow. Yep.
And so the San Francisco Board of Supervisors voted 8-3 in favor of the highly debated policy. Under this policy, SFPD is authorized to use these robots to carry out deadly force in extremely limited situations when risk to life to members of the public or officers is imminent and outweighs any other force options available. So if you're a suicide bomber, go to San Francisco. They'll do the bombing for you.
Oh, Steve, this is just incredible.
Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to our thought of the week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to iTunes, Spotify, Rumble, or anywhere and hit the subscribe button. Thanks for doing it. Let me first tell you one thing. It doesn't matter what the world says about Israel. It doesn't matter what they say about us anywhere else. The only thing that matters is that we can exist here on the land of our forefathers. And unless we show the Arabs that there is a high cost to murdering Jews, we won't survive. David Ben-Gurion. We could not guard every water pipeline from being blown up and every tree from being uprooted. We could not prevent every murder of a worker in an orchard or a family in their beds. But it was in our power to set high price for our blood, a price too high for the Arab community, the Arab army, or the Arab governments to think it worth paying. It was in our power to cause the Arab governments to renounce the policy of strength led by turning it into a demonstration of weakness. Moshe Dayan. Last one. By the way, did you ever realize that if Moses would have turned right instead of left, we'd have had the oil and they would have had the sand? Gold in my ear. Well, that's it for this episode. Really hoped you like it. Write to me at millcreekview@yahoo.com and I just might read it on the air. Thank you, Lori Moore, for making the world a little nicer. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the millcreekviewonline.com. Peace in our time.
County Fair.